This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Choco Perfection, the only sugar-free chocolate sweetened from chicory root fiber. It doesn't raise blood sugar levels, and it supports the growth of beneficial probiotic flora. Choco Perfection supports weight loss as part of a low-carb eating program. Plus, it has all the beneficial antioxidants of chocolate. And it tastes great, like a really good chocolate bar. Just in time for Valentine's Day, you can get free 3-day shipping. To order, go to ChocoPerfection.com. That's ChocoPerfection.com or call 800-332-1773. That's 800-332-1773 for Choco Perfection. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and I think it's an appropriate time of year to discuss the bane of a lot of people's existence in midwinter, which is cold and flu season. And this cold and flu season is particularly inauspicious because, well, they told us to get the flu shot, but according to the latest statistics, the flu shot this year is a flop. So we are this year forced to look at natural remedies. And I can think of no two people who could better inform us about the subjects than today's guests, Carl and Joan Robinson. They're health educators and co-founders of liquid dietary supplement manufacturer Cedar Bear Naturals. And that's a very good company. They make a lot of very clean, natural products. And in terms of background, Carl is a clinical and formulary herbalist and nutritional therapist with a Master of Herbology in herbal pharmacognosy, as well as pharmacology. And he's been an insider in the herbal products industry for 30 years. He actually was instrumental in passage of state legislation that in turn became a template for the federal government's Dietary Supplement Health Education Act, which is something that we still preside under. That's the current framework for regulating nutritional supplements. And he's the author of numerous white papers and published works and educational courses on herbs and natural health. Joan is a traditional herbalist, yoga instructor, and meditation facilitator. She's an organic gardener. And she has gone to the dark side because she's the daughter of an MD internist. And now she's involved in herbal medicine. So she's seen both sides of medicine in her life and in her career. And she herself, we'll talk a little bit about it, has overcome a serious medical challenge using natural means. So welcome, Carl and Joan. It's a pleasure having you on the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.
Well, thank you.
Thank you very much for having us.
It's my pleasure. And so frame the issue for us. You know, the CDC announced that there were some problems, unforeseen problems with this year's flu vaccine. What's the deal?
Well, what happened was the vaccine at the end of the year, when they get ready to do the vaccines for the following year, the year that's coming up, they'll usually do a statistical review. Statistics. Anyway, they'll do a statistical review of the most likely direction that the flu virus is going to take. And they'll pick the top three variants, meaning the flu virus mutation pathways, they'll pick the top three and they'll base next year's flu vaccine on those top three that statistically are supposed to be the ones that show up as most likely to be what they have to deal with.
Well, it's kind of like a long-range weather prediction, which doesn't always work out well. It's like poor Richard's almanac. You know, it's like this is going to be.
It's called the specious vaccine almanac.
Right.
Anyway. So anyway, that's well said. So anyway, what happened was they got all the vaccines manufactured and done, which is done sometime in May, June. When they hit August, September, which is when they start seeing where the flu is going to go, by October, November, they saw that this year the flu did not hit a single one of the three flu variants that were in the current vaccination. It went off in a completely different direction.
They actually knew that in the summertime,
yeah,
but did not release that information that the flu yet those that were coming at us had mutated significantly from the vaccine that they prepared.
Full disclosure by the government, because they were urging everyone must get the flu vaccine. That's your only hope, and and they knew all along that it was going to be, for a lot of Americans, an exercise in futility.
They know within the next quarter if the flu shot they've done is going to be able to meet the need. The problem is, CDC was so embarrassed by it, because a lot of our flu vaccines that are produced here in the United States, they're also replicated through the companies that do it throughout the world, so that they can basically be at the head of not having this thing revolve and become epidemic throughout the world. So it was so embarrassing. They were so committed to the vaccine and found out it wasn't working. For the first time in their history concerning the flu vaccine, they not only had to go public, they had to go international with that announcement.
And they did that early December.
Yeah. Yeah, they did it in early December, which sadly was about, proverbially speaking, was a dollar short and a day late.
Yeah.
For instance, out here where we're at, we're in the northeast section of Utah up in the Uinta Basin. We're in an outlying rural area. We already had the flu. The hospitals and clinics were already getting this flu variant 1st of November, last part of October. And where the flu is supposed to peak in February out here, it was already starting to peak late December.
Wow. So the whole thing is kind of a fiasco, and they'd rather forget about this year. Okay, better luck next time, guys. But in the meantime, we're thrown back on our own resources. You guys have long urge people to utilize natural self-care methods to treat colds and flus, because, in the current medical armamentarium, we have these antiviral medications. Now they're saying use the antiviral medications like Tamiflu, which have been roundly criticized. A major article in the British Medical Journal suggests that Tamiflu is just an example of an overhyped medication that for the vast majority of people at best may somewhat shorten the duration of the flu, maybe by a day, but doesn't really do that much and can have a lot of side effects.
And Tamiflu, we've spent some time studying it, and its shortening of the duration of the flu is by 1 to 3 days. And it's been shown, in clinical studies no less, to lessen the symptoms so they're not as harsh. Here's the problem with Tamiflu. It has to be taken not 24 to 48 hours. It's within the first 24 hours of a flu onset. Most people don't even know they have a flu onset until 48 to 72 hours. After that, Tamiflu, it's not going to do what it needs to do. It is not a preventative. There was a time when it was being off-label. It was being off-label sold by a lot of unscrupulous physicians and pharmacists.
They were like stocking nursing homes with it to give people that on a daily basis, and it was
exactly wrong use. The FDA hasn't even approved it for that. It is strictly a mitigating agent, meaning it lessens duration of symptoms and time. That is it. Within that very, very tight protocol of within 24 hours. The fact of the matter is, I don't know I really got a flu until I'm getting, as I've gotten older, I'm more sensitive. But
is it a cold? Is it a flu? Am I just a little exhausted under the weather? Will it pass? And then you get hit like a freight train.
Is it a bronchial bacteria, which can come off as a flu? Guess what? Tamiflu and vaccines don't work for that. That's a bacterium, like pneumonia.
So let's look at some of the popular herbs in our natural armamentarium against colds and flu. And, of course, what first comes to mind is echinacea, very popular in the U.S. and throughout the world. What's the story behind that?
Well, first of all, echinacea should never be used as a preventative measure, number one.
Okay.
It was never, even in traditional cultures that use it, it is an acute crisis intervention. It's not supposed to be used preventively. There's other herbs that build the immune system. Echinacea stimulates the immune system, so you do not want to use it. In fact,
it increases the white blood cell count activity in the body.
And for certain people that have certain kinds of autoimmune conditions, that can prove disastrous.
Well, that's an interesting point, because that has been a controversial issue. Is there such a thing as too much immunity for some people? And you, as a pharmacognosist and a pharmacologist, and you've done a lot of research, probably done monographs on echinacea. You actually subscribe to the notion that, say, someone who has rheumatoid arthritis, perhaps, or
absolutely
multiple sclerosis,
not.
maybe not so good.
No.
Okay.
Well, I'm the one that is the autoimmune profile person.
Yeah,
she's a canary.
Okay, great.
And echinacea is one I very seldom use in very, very small amounts or in a complex formula because it's just too strong for my immune system. Yeah. Can set it off.
And, you know, for many years, going back 15, 20 years, I was saying this because there's an energetic profile to herbs, not just the pharmacognostic, pharmacological, the chemical, and the clinical considerations. There's an actual energy profile. And I saw very early on that this energy profile, most immune conditions are hot. They're stimulated. It's an overstimulation. Mm-hmm. Echinacea is heating to the system. It has a stimulating effect. That's contraindicated, and I saw that. And then about 7-8 years ago, I began to see some stuff coming out of the medical circles stating that people with autoimmune conditions should not be given drugs that stimulate the immune system. Wow.
Interesting. So, this actually is one of the more definitive answers that I've gotten on the subject, because people go back and forth, and a lot of people kind of poo-poo this notion that, oh, echinacea is innocuous, it's only going to help, and there's no condition where, you know, it's like, chicken soup. It's always beneficial, never harmful.
It's not that way. The problem with echinacea, it stimulates. Any herb, any food, any drug that has a stimulating effect on the body can set in motion what's called desensitization. You can actually so stimulate a system that it begins to desensitize, and it's the old proverb, why do we have to take more of a drug or more of a synthetic vitamin to get the same hit? Because the system, the liver, is kicking in more and more buffering systems, becoming stronger in its buffering action and countering that stimulating effect. And why? Because that's what nature does. It always strives for balance.
Now, we have a suggestion with echinacea, because there's more than one kind of echinacea. Most people have it in their gardens.
It grows as a beautiful purple flower.
Purple yes. Coneflower, that's echinacea purpurea. All of the echinaceas can be used medicinally. The root is the part that is most commonly
used. Studied.
However, the leaf and the flower can be used as a gentler use for helping bring down and soothe and benefit the immune system without kicking it into high gear like the root does. And you can do that, make it dry it and bring it in your house, then dry it, and make a tea out of it.
And I might add that echinacea specifically, as far as the body system it targets, it's the respiratory system.
Mm-hmm. Right. So what would be an appropriate use for it? Say, say you come down with an ordinary cold, run-of-the-mill rhinovirus. Is it helpful in that setting?
Echinacea probably kind of might help for that, but what echinacea does is it increases T-cell count. T-cell count is very, very bacterial-oriented. As far as viruses are concerned, that's more in the realm of antioxidant activity and other interferon-stimulating type of immune components. Mm-hmm. So, if you're using echinacea for the flu, especially a respiratory flu, there are actually other herbs that are more well-suited to that. If you're talking about a bacterial-based respiratory incursion.
Bronchitis, typical bronchitis. And by the way, a lot of medical studies are now showing, it previously was thought, okay, bronchitis, if you have a cold, fine. We know that a virus not responsive to antibiotics, I think that's a big duh now. Most doctors are aware of this, and the public is finally getting the message. But the new thing is that the vast majority of bronchitis episodes, where it gets into your chest and you're coughing up yellowish sputum, that used to always call for a powerful dose of an antibiotic, Biaxin or something like that. Now we know that the 80% of those are self-limited, that they don't respond well to antibiotics and should be managed conservatively. Would that be a good setting for use of echinacea?
A moderate use. Actually, when you get to a stage of bronchitis, that's called after effect of, say, if somebody's had a respiratory flu, RSV, or if they have had a bout of mycoplasma, or a bacterial lung problem. Usually the lungs, because they've been so traumatized, the tissues at the bronchial level from the coughing, the hacking, it takes anywhere from a number of weeks to maybe 3 or 4 months for those tissues, depending on the individual and their constitution, to heal so that there's not that constant irritation. Because now that the lungs have been traumatized and your lung tissue, your respiratory tissue, some of the most sensitive tissues in the body, only the nerves are more sensitive and take longer to heal. So this bronchitis is just a residual effect of the irritation working its way through and the lungs healing. And that's
it's more of an inflammatory problem at that point.
Exactly.
And so there are other herbs
and
for
so
that.
What we look at in that situation, especially when I'm taking a clinical, put my clinical hat on, is there bronchial problems? Are they of a dry nature? Meaning, is it a dry cough? Is it a cough that just can't seem to produce any mucus or mucoid? Or is it a wet cough, meaning that they're producing copious amounts of a mucoid or a mucus
with
condition?
With the nose running.
With the nose runnings and stuff. Those require completely different types of herbs and approach, because obviously if the tissues are dry, scratchy, irritated that way, you need to use herbs that help to moisten, that help to soothe.
The marshmallow.
The marshmallows, the mullein type of things. If, on the other hand, it's a very copious producing type of cough and hacking, then you use the herbs like the wild cherry bark, elecampane, which has a drying action.
White pine.
And white pine. So this is the first
so
thing.
So these are actually available, and you actually have a company, Cedar Bear. So as an alternative to like Hicodan cough syrup, you know, with the codeine
right.
that suppresses the cough, and we now know that suppressing the cough, okay, it may help you sleep, but you know, A, you're stoned and you're dysfunctional, and B, it's addicting, and C, just the suppression of the cough reflex may actually cause the problem to worsen and prolong the infection, impeding the lung clearance of this infectious material.
Well, Ronald, as you've noticed here when I've talked about products, and especially when I talk about our company's products, mm-hmm. I'm not going to go to the medical side. I'm not going to say that it's okay. going to knock out bacteria, knock out viruses, anything like that. When I said the energetic quality of these herbs, which is rooted in pharmacognosy and pharmacology and chemistry and the clinical considerations, but when I talk this mm-hmm. way, I said drying and scratchy, and it's going to be a little more heated versus the more fluid, wet, more coolish, maybe even pushing more to the chronic side. Those are not actual medical conditions.
Right.
Those are states of physiological and function.
You know, I should have known that you weren't going to address disease states, because you are actually one of the authors of DSHE, which is the Dietary Supplement Health Education Act, which is all about structure function and permits natural products manufacturers to make claims about supporting organ health or
building balancing.
Supporting, balancing, but not like, hey, this is the bomb for treating pneumonia. You know, you can't say that.
You know, Ronald, before DSHE came along, I was an insider, an industry insider. This is before my company, and I founded the company and everything like that. I was an insider in the industry. One of the things I did was technical marketing consulting, making sure that people didn't say things that got them thrown in jail and had their companies have injunctions thrown on them. Because back in those days, they could throw an injunction without due process and throw the person in jail.
Yep.
And it was all about the wording. And I used to tell people, I just quit talking about disease, quit talking about your product doing this and this, and talk from the point of view of energy, the nutritional, and more importantly, the biochemical and the physiological aspects. Not the medical side, but the functional and the physical. And
okay.
That's why when I say, is it a dry cough or is it a wet cough?
Okay, let's come up with a hypothetical. My typical cold is just, it's Niagara Falls. It's a miserable, you know, flowing mucus, nasal, sometimes associated with bodily aches and pains. Occasionally we get to the coughing stage, but mostly it's just, you know, cement in my head and lots of mucus flow. So ordinary colds, what are some of the herbs that are supportive for that?
What I would look at, and I'd say, without going into the medical side, but just simply the structure and function side, you're exhibiting a wet, more of a cooling type of condition. And it's focused on your respiratory system. So what do? We go after herbs that have an affinity for the respiratory system, including the sinuses. That's things like thyme, fenugreek, and
yarrow.
Elderberry. And for the lungs, the ones that I mentioned, the elecampane, the white pine, as well as the wild cherry. So these are herbs that would go for the respiratory system to counter that profile of being overly wet and a little cool and your system needing to be warmed up.
You mean the Smith brothers had it right with their wild cherry lozenges? There's something to that. You know, the old Smith brothers lozenges that are made from wild cherry?
Well, yes, they did, as far as people with wet, copious, productive coughs.
And now, it originally came from the wild choke cherry bark, not from cherries.
Yes. Oh. Now, interestingly, I was the first individual, and my company was the first company, to address the dry hacking cough that you see more here in the West, in the high deserts, in the arid areas, in the Southwest.
Perhaps people sensitive to cedar pollen and so on.
And the fact that our colds here, as far as coughs and things, are typically dry, scratchy, sticky. You have to really hack and cough to get any kind of productive mucus flow. And that had not been addressed in American herbalism and in the commercial herbal products industry until we came along.
Well, you sound like you're really on top of it and very well informed. This is a good point at which to pause, because we divide our podcast into two parts. In part two, I'd like you to talk about some of the commonly used products. Elderberry, want to talk a little bit more about. Lomatia is a popular herb. Oregon graperoot, which contains berberine, which is a potent antimicrobial, and garlic and some others. So stay with us, folks. Please rejoin us for part two of our discussion with master herbalists and health educators, Carl and Joan Robinson, who are co-founders of Cedar Bear Naturals. Is it Naturals or Naturals?
It's just Naturals.
Okay,
it's
great.
It's a French spelling.
It's spelled with an E-S on the end.
Yeah.
But it's like au natural. It's like walking around without clothes. But
yes.
It's natural. Okay.
Like I said, there's a story behind that.
skinny dipping and use. I don't want to hear about that story. All right. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.